The blare of the trumpets grew louder, like a deep golden tide surge, like the soft booming of the evening tides against the silver beaches of Volusia. The throng shouted, women flung roses from the roofs as the rhythmic chiming of silver hosts came clearer, and the first of the mighty array swung into view in the broad white street that curved round the gold-inspired Tower of Splendor. First came the trumpeters, slim youths, clad in scarlet, riding with a flourish of long, slender golden trumpets. Next, the bowmen, tall men from the mountains. And behind these, the heavily armed footmen, their broad shields clashing in unison, their long spears swaying in perfect rhythm to their stride. Behind them came the mightiest soldiery in all the world, the Red Slayers, horsemen splendidly mounted, armed in red from helmet to spur. Proudly they sat their steeds, looking neither to right nor to left, but aware of the shouting for all that. Like bronze statues they were, and there was never a waver in the forest of spears that reared above them.
HPPodCraft.com.
76 trombones led the big parade with 110 cornets close at hand. No, this story is not about the king, Robert Preston, no. We are all Howard all month with Thulai.
Thulai. I didn't know that song you sang, though.
The Music Man.
That's what that is, The Music
Man? That's from The Music Man, yeah.
I've never seen it. Is it about the story?
No, it has nothing to do with the story, except there's kind of a parade in there and a marching band, so...
When you get an opportunity like that, take it. What if I repeat it to somebody? Oh yeah, The Music Man, that's about Call the Conqueror. How amazing would that be? You could have spread a divine misinformation into the world.
This is our final story of the month, and it was recommended to us by listener Blake Coleman, and it's The Shadow Kingdom.
Blake wrote, I was just catching up on shows and heard you're going to be celebrating another Thulai. I had almost given up hope that you were going to revisit Robert E. Howard again. I recommended The Shadow Kingdom years ago to you, so I hope that's one you'll be reading, especially since it's the origin of the reptilian world leader's conspiracy theory. It's the origin!
Yeah.
And you were asking about this a while ago because it was referenced in that Fritz Leiber Terror from the Depths book.
I
think that's what we talked about.
Yeah. I think they're different things.
Yeah.
But we'll get into that later.
Well, this is saying that all that comes from this story. So it's not V like you were saying, like you were writing online everywhere, arguing with people and stuff.
Yeah, as I do.
Putting that out there. Yeah, well, hey, I'm on to you and your internet identities, by the way. Not a Snake Man 39.
What?
That's you.
No.
Blake is an archaeologist that recommended the story, or at least he was in 2016, because he wrote me and talked about working at NYU. He was working at the library at NYU's Institute for the Study of the Ancient World. If he's saying this is the origin of the snake myth, I believe him.
Oh, it is. Well, of the reptilian myth, which is not entirely the same as the snake man or snake people Native American thing. That's a whole other... side thing.
Blake also wrote recently to say for a future topic show, you guys should review Underwater. See, we are paying attention to recommendations. And I actually did see that movie. It's great. I recommend it for two reasons, and they might not sound favorable. One, it's entirely predictable.
Oh.
But no, it's great because it's like a well-tuned machine. Everything that's set up is paid off. I mean it in that way. Tight, concise. You get what you're expecting. But,
okay.
But that leads into my second reason, which is you don't really have to focus too hard on Underwater. There's like 2 minutes of character development, and then you are off to the races. It's relentless, and then it's over. So,
oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. For folks who are into that kind of experience, which I am, check it out. And I think it would make a great double feature with another movie. I think I've referenced it before, but I did see it recently, called Sea Fever, which is another water monster movie. And I think those two would make a great double feature if folks haven't seen it. Who the heck was that reader?
That reader is Sean Burnham. You may know Sean from his musical alter ego, John Dingo. John Dingo has a newly released EP called Witch's Mixtape, which you can find on Bandcamp. See what I did there? Witch.
I did see what you did there. Witch. Me? Well, we're playing a little of that right now underneath this. And
yeah.
I want to point, it's really good. I want to point out that even though we're only a week away from the new Pitch Black Manor album, Monster Classics, dropping, I'm so confident in the material in that album, I don't even need to mention it.
Wow. Okay.
In fact, I'm promoting an entirely different horror-themed album. That's how confident I am. Seriously, though, I did listen to this whole EP this morning, and it's really, really good. So
yeah.
I recommend picking it up. We'll have a link in the show notes. Witch's Mixtape by Johnny Dingo. Or John Dingo, sorry. He's a grown-up now. It would make a great double feature, I think, this too, with another horror-themed album of your choice, I think.
Yeah.
You know, buy two of them. That's what I would recommend.
That is exactly what I would recommend as well. We had some Conan, and then we had some Solomon Kane, and now we're jumping back to the ancient days of yore with Cole.
We went to see that Cole movie that came out together, right?
Yes, with Kevin Sorbo?
Kevin Sorbo, I think is his name. Hercules was his show.
Yes.
Right? Yeah, he's TV Hercules to me.
TV Hercules.
Like those are his initials, TV Hercules. And I don't remember anything about that movie except there was a lot of metal music in it. I think I liked it.
Yeah. I think it was pretty low budge B movie, but it was a fun B movie,
yeah,
as I can recall.
I read some Cole comics as a kid. I know we've talked about that before. I mean, I was interested to learn more about this character.
Cole is also known as Cole of Atlantis, and he was born in 100,000 BC,
whoa,
before the Atlantean cataclysm. Cole was part of the Thurian Age. After the Great Cataclysm, there was a Dark Age and people were back to Stone Age levels of technology. The Hyborian Age came around about 10,000 BC. So Cole is way back in time.
Yeah, he's an old timer.
The story begins with a big parade all in honor of King Cole. He is now the king of Volusia after recently conquering it. Some folks love him. That is Cole, see? What a king and what a man. Look at his arms, his shoulders. And an undertone of more sinister whisperings. Cole, ha, accursed usurper of the pagan isles. I shame to Volusia that a barbarian sits on the throne of kings. But Cole, he doesn't care. He knows that Volusia was on the decline and that he was there to clean things up.
Yeah, the important thing here is that he's an outsider. Volusia is a sophisticated civilization and he's taken his throne by force because, as you pointed out, he's an Atlantean. He's mistrusted by the people he rules and the people he comes from, we discover, are also angry at him for becoming Volusian. Mm. And he has all of the old conflicts of the Atlanteans. He's got all the conflicts of the Volusians that he's assumed. He's keenly aware that he lives in this kind of liminal space between worlds. And this is happening right at the top. It actually introduces the whole theme of the story, which is classic Howard to me, because the core of the story seems like something he'd be angrily dashing off in study hall after he found out that a friend was talking about him. You know, it's got that snake Jimmy so two-faced, telling everybody I peed in the coat room. You know, we'll see what King Cole has to say about that. Dun, 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 dun. But except in the rendering of the story, he can't help himself. He elevates it. It's pulp, but it's a little sophisticated, too. This was published in the August 1929 issue, Weird Tales, so Howard's probably 22 when he writes this.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it's just a gut instinct in him or something he learned, but I've noticed that in all of these stories we've done, they set up and they execute on classic hero versus monster / villain plots, but they also always drive towards self-revelation on the part of the main character. And also dwell on the nature of society a little bit. And so the theme of this story is dual natures. The villains present one face but have another, spoiler alert. But even before that's revealed, our hero is occupying this space of attempting to be authentic in a world that demands a lot of different masks.
Right.
And we'll see that this drives him to ponder not only, am I just like the snake men that he ends up fighting against, or is this kind of duality inevitable? Because we all have to do this to an extent. And that's pretty advanced stuff.
Yeah. So now we move on to Cole in the council chamber having to do king stuff.
Right. He has to listen to the flattery of the lords and the ladies, it says, with carefully hidden grim amusement of such frivolities. He's not saying what he thinks. He's doing one thing because he needs to, but feels another way.
An emissary from the Pictish embassy shows up. Now, Atlanteans and Picts hate each other, but there's peace in place now. The emissary asks Cole if he would meet with the leader of the Picts, Canu. Cole says, sure, in a few weeks, but the emissary asks if he could speak alone and not in front of everybody. So Cole dismisses everybody, even the servants, and the emissary asks for Cole to meet Canu tonight alone. Cole thinks this could be some kind of trap, but Picts are known for their honor and truthin'.
Yeah.
But that doesn't stop Cole from winding him up a bit. So the emissary knows that he's trying to wind him up, but doesn't put up with any of it. And he says, look, I got business, but if you want to dishonor me, I'll challenge you to a duel. And Cole turns down the duel, but he likes this guy's gumption, so he agrees to meet that night.
I like this line that says, a king does not accept the challenge of a nameless savage, he sneered. Which is, somebody wrote a comment on our show I didn't like the other day. I said the same thing. Me and Cole.
These are kindred spirits.
Kindred spirits, yeah.
Cole is still puzzled by all of this.
And that gets us into chapter 2. Thus spake the silent halls of Volusia. Little oxymoron action there.
Speaking, but not with words.
Mm.
Cole sits at the table of the Pict leader, Canu, and Canu is old and fat.
It's making Cole nervous because I think he's seeing the future a little bit. He thinks about that. Is this what's going to become of me?
He enjoys his life, Kanu, and all it has to offer, but he's also very shrewd. He's been around a long time, and he has this big banquet, but as the night wears on, Kamu dismisses everyone.
Says, Kanu kept up a running fire of jests and comments, and Cole, secretly contemptuous of his garrulity, nevertheless missed none of his shrewd humor, so... Cole's laughing at the appropriate times. I think he's having an experience. It's a little bit of that dance you have to do on this podcast.
Yeah. Boy, is it ever.
oh, he said a joke. It sure is.
Oh, boy.
That's a safe one.
He says, "You are thinking, Cole, that Kanu is a useless old reprobate, fit for nothing except guzzling wine and kissing wenches." In fact, this remark was so much in line with his actual thoughts and so plainly put that Cole was rather startled, though he gave no sign. That's something that Howard does in every single one of his stories, that people, that these protagonists feel something, but they never show it.
It makes you think maybe he's walking around in that state all the time.
Yeah.
I get it. I remember there was a joke about me at a job I had when one of my bosses said I had gas face. I didn't want to be there, you know, and it was coming off. It was obvious. I was pacing around the office looking like I was pissed off. Chad's got gas face.
Yeah. So Kanu says, "You got power and know-how, Cole, and I think that your rule will bring stability for the land, and with stability, great profit if you survive."
He's kind of got that old mobster vibe where they say, "War isn't, we're all making money. We can't have war. This younger generation is crazy. We should be at peace." But I like that he says, "if you survive." I mean, that's obviously to the point of what he's going to tell him. Because it's usually implied that you survive if someone's talking about the future. But it made me think, maybe that's something you should say out loud more often. It's kind of interesting. Like, "You guys should go watch Underwater. You'll really like it if you survive." What the hell is that? What does he mean by that?
That's a good one. So Cole thinks that this might be a threat, but then Kanu says, "I'm no threat to you. I will be sending you my man, Brule, the Spear Slayer. And you can trust him. He will be wearing this bracelet with a winged dragon on it." And he shows him this kind of gold bracelet. And Cole asks why he should trust him or Kanu. And Kanu just pulls out this green jewel out of his belt. And it is the jewel of the Temple of the Serpent. Now, it seems that this thing was stolen. And whoever did it offended a lot of powerful people. Now, Cole could arrest him on the spot and be totally justified in doing it. But then he wonders, why would he show me this? Because he's just put his fate in my hands for no reason. Yeah.
And you can trust Cole when he says that jewel is important because Kanu was also flashing his balls. Kanu, Cole didn't even notice. So stricken was he by this. And it's in the text. It says, "And with the speed of a striking hawk, the ancient snatched something from his robes, something that flung a weird green light over them and which he replaced in an instant." Them. You know, what else could he be referring to?
Wow. You're doing some...
It's textual analysis is what you're
talking about. Yeah, the textual analysis is what I was...
High-level, 300-level textual analysis.
Exactly.
He goes, the green jewel from the Temple of the Serpent. That's a long name. I thought it would be like, "Colin, the adventure begins." You know? But he goes, "Why do you show it to me?"
"Because," Kanu says, "I want to prove to you that I trust you and that you can trust me. Anyway, it's late. I'll send my guy over tomorrow night." And Cole's like, "Wait, what? What the hell's going on?" Kanu admonishes him for being impatient. And then he just ends the evening and Cole leaves. A bit confused.
Yeah, it's very mobster. A baker's gonna come see you. Do what he says.
When Cole returns to his palace, he looks at the ancient buildings. "What secrets do you hold?"
"You are young," said the palaces and the temples and the shrines. "But we are old. The world was wild with youth when we were reared. You and your tribe shall pass, but we are invincible. Indestructible. We towered above a strange world ere Atlantis and Lemuria rose from the sea. We still shall reign when the green waters sigh for many a restless fathom above the spires of Lemuria and the hills of Atlantis, and when the isles of the western men are the mountains of a strange land. How many kings have we watched ride down these streets before Cull of Atlantis was even a dream in the mind of Ka, bird of creation? Ride on, Cull of Atlantis. Greater shall follow you. Greater came before you. They are dust. They are forgotten. We stand. We know. We are. Ride on, Cull of Atlantis. Cull the king. Cull the fool."
And that's that silent spaking that was referenced in the title. And driving home that even in this ancient history, there's older history. Mm-hmm. We're all insignificant. Yeah. And it drives home that idea that heroes and villains are kind of the same. It's just who's the victor, who's the vanquished in this kind of endless churn. And like I say, we have some self-revelation, some self-reflection in the story, but also a hint of, is it even worth it?
you know?
It's all in there.
Cole tries to fall asleep, but he can't. So many questions, and he will have to wait for answers.
Into chapter 3, They That Walk the Night.
So the next night, the moon has not yet risen when Cole moves to his balcony, sword in hand, because he senses someone climbing up. The arm shows the gold dragon bracelet, and he pulls itself up, and we can see that this is the emissary from before that Cole insulted. He is Brule. Like oil and water, these two.
Yeah, this actually almost got greenlit as a buddy comedy in the 80s, this story. vehicle for Schwarzenegger and Carl Weathers. Wish I could have seen it, but, you know, they kept developing stuff. Eventually, we got Predator. But this was going to be like a 48-hour style, you know, sword and sorcery adventure. You know, as we're talking about this, I just realized something. You're saying Brule, but maybe the guy's name is Brule.
Oh, right.
Like creme brulee. Like, maybe Howard is trying to say this guy is delicious?
It's very possible. However, yeah. I'm going to go with my pronunciation because it reminds me of Dr. Steve Brule. For your health.
I don't know who Dr. Steve Brule is.
It's Tim and Eric Awesome Show.
Oh.
It's John C. Reilly. And it's this character he does who gives like health advice. He's Dr. Steve Brule. For your health.
I only know John C. Reilly from that Sherlock Holmes movie.
I am Brule, the Spear Slayer. And then he gets close to Cole and whispers, Kanamaka Lajirama.
Cole says, I did not join Dollar Whisper Club. What kind of foul stoking is this?
Cole doesn't know the words, but they are familiar to him.
Yeah, I heard him in a doo-wop song, I think. Because it's just absurd. Every time he said it, I know that it resonates with him because of some ancestral memory. Yeah, so that's why it doesn't sound silly. But I mean, I just kept imagining like, Rama Lama Ding Dong.
Brule asks him who guards the door, and Cole says it's 18 of the Red Slayers. But how did he get past the guards? And Brule says, oh, those guys suck. I am awesome.
He says, I have hunted tigers on the foggy beaches. And then he goes on to brag about some other things, but I just wish Cole had stopped him and said, what? Why? Why were you on foggy beaches hunting tigers, man? Were you trapped in a romance novel cover or something? That doesn't make sense for either you or the tiger.
Brule asks Cole to touch the bracelet, and he does. This puts Brule at ease. Brule tells him to ditch the kingly robes because they've got deeds to do. Aw, yeah.
Loincloth time.
Strangely, though, Cole seems to be asexual as a character because he never in any of his stories does he show any interest in relationships, sex, or romantic love of any kind, though he does in some of his other stories facilitate romance of other characters.
Oh, he's like Hitch.
He's like Hitch, exactly. But doesn't Hitch actually end up getting hooked up in the end?
I just saw the poster. I've been waiting to watch that one. Thanks.
Waiting 20 plus years?
I thought Hitch became king.
My point is that Cole is a pretty strong contrast to the Sex Panther Conan.
Right. There is a revelation in the end of this story about, I thought, where he's never been with a woman at all, ever. He actually says it.
Oh, boy, I missed that.
I'll point it out at the end. Yeah, he actually goes, or the love of a woman, which I have never known.
Oh, whoa.
Yeah, so it's a big contrast to Sex Panther. It's not even like he did it and didn't like it, or he's just got other things to do.
Wow.
So that's Conan, who is all sex, call asexual. And then I think Solomon Kane's interesting because after that story we read, we know that he knows now that with just a little courage, he can have sex with any ghost who's up for it. He actually can penetrate that veil. And so who knows what shenanigans. You know, it's too bad that Howard died so young. We could have found out what the ghost single scene is like.
Wow. Brule has Cole look out into the hall, and he tells them to make note of the 8 warriors he sees out there. Brule then shows Cole a secret passageway. Cole is super surprised by this because he didn't know it was there.
By Volca, someone shall dance for this. I thought that was funny, too, because then Brule goes, shh. Like, Cole's been bragging about how good he is at hiding stuff, but he just blurted that out.
They sneak inside, and then there is some light filtered in from who knows where, but they find other secret doors to many rooms. Brule rounds a corner and tells Cole to keep cool and check this out. Cole looks around and he sees the bodies of the 18 Red Slayers lying on the ground. Mm-hmm. Cole is confused at how quickly they could have been dispatched, but Brule has them go back to the room. Cole's thinking, are they ghosts? But Brule says, the snake that speaks. Cole responds, that is death to speak. That is a name accursed.
Wisely, they're afraid to say the name of Manimal.
Gruul tells Cole to look down in the hall again, and he sees that the guards are there, the same ones. Gruul asks what he knows about the history of Volusia. Cole knows that it's very old, but that's about it. Gruul says men were not always ruled by men. Gruul says in the ancient days, when his people first came to this land, they fought with the people of Volusia, slaying their leader to find, and then he just trails off. All this talk is stirring something in Cole. He feels a deep kinship to the Pict, enemy of his people.
Once you get through that hard exterior, Gruul, you're pretty delicious underneath.
In the secret passageway and see two, Cole's chief counselor going down the hall to Cole's room with a bared dagger. Gruul says that he plans on assassinating Cole. Gruul says they need to meet him in the room, because if they find out that they know about the secret passageways, then they're hosed.
Yeah.
They get to the room and hide. Two comes in with blade drawn and looks around. Gruul yells, slay! And Cole says, I always do, queen. Cole jumps out and runs two through with a sword and two drops. Nice. It says, as he watched, Two's face became strangely dim and unreal. The features mingled and merged in a seemingly impossible manner. Then, like a fading mask of fog, the face suddenly vanished, and in its stead gaped and leered a monstrous serpent's head.
I know it's magic, but I like to think that all these guys had to have massive hairdos in order to hide the snakehood.
Gruul and Cole look at each other in shock, but Gruul says, we're not done yet. Cole recognizes him as a priest of the serpent god. Gruul says Two sleeps and doesn't know any of this. They can turn into anybody, these snake people. So they're not just like, I have one form. They can just change into any person at any time.
Right.
Cole goes to leave and Gruul says, where are you going? And Cole goes, I'm going to kill all these guards. And Gruul says, no, man. Strike at the skull, if at all. As in, you kill these dudes, they'll know you know. It's a conspiracy. You got to find out who's in charge. He also says that the guards aren't actually dead, which is a bit confusing. I mean, I guess they're sleeping so that if this assassin was successful, they would get the blame for not protecting Cole.
And it's a like a charm, you know, because they go to sleep and they think they stood guard all night. So it's more than just a sleep spell.
Gruul takes the body and drags it out into the secret passageway. Moments later, Gruul returns and Cole comments, you were swift. I, the warrior stepped forward, eyeing the floor. There is gore upon the rug. See? And Cole goes to look, but when he does, he catches Gruul moving to attack him, and Cole quickly kills him. Guess what? Snake Man!
Yeah.
I love that there's gore upon the rug bit. You know,
yeah, like, good one. I like the way you delivered that, actually, because I was thinking, this is the plot of every... I watch a lot of 80s cartoons. This is the plot of all of them. You know, somebody is impersonating Spider-Man, but they always go, I, Miss Lion, you are a good dog. That's always what the imposter sounds like.
So, man, does this mean that Canoe is a serpent person too? Oh, man. Why the elaborate setup? What the hell is going on? Then Gruul comes in through the secret passageway. But now Cole notices that this Gruul has a gold dragon bracelet on. Yeah. And Gruul reckons that one of them saw him in the tunnels and took his form.
So that means these guys know they're on to this fact. That they know about them. They're a few steps ahead of them, which makes it even funnier. That the best they could come up with was, check out this gore on the rug. There's so much more he could have done. He had the, you know, Cole thought he was his buddy.
Yeah.
He didn't have to go, look over there at all. There's so many things.
Cole asks, how do I know that you're really you? And Gruul laughs and says there are two reasons. One, no snake man can wear the dragon bracelet. And no snake man can speak the words, Ka Nama Ka La Jirama. And Cole repeats the words again, and they sound familiar to him. Gruul explains that is because they are part of his ancestral memory. Cole gets a vision of the past and is unsettled for a moment.
That's how it's said. Suddenly, like the swinging wide of a mystic door, misty unfathomed reaches opened in the recesses of his consciousness. He says, these sudden glimpses into the abysses of memory always startled him. It's like, are you talking about the reader? Because this does happen all the time in Howard stories. Or... are you saying, or is Cole saying, yeah, it's like headaches, you know, I just have these visions into the past.
Gruul explains all the Batman and dog boys and bird girls are now gone. But the serpent people still exist, hoping to reclaim their rule.
So it sounds like you're making stuff up, but it really says that.
Yeah.
But you're also leaving out the most important detail. It says, and I think this is just Howard reaching across the ages to mess with me specifically. It says, they are gone. The bird women, the harpies, the batmen, the flying fiends, the wolf people, the demons, the goblins, all save such as this being that lies at our feet. And a few of the wolfmen. What? What? It's in there. He says, and a few of the wolfmen. And then they never address it again.
No. Rule continues and explains, over the years, some rulers of Eleusia have been slain only to be revealed as serpent men. The true king killed and replaced, as Cole would have been tonight.
That's cool, because earlier he talks about, you know, how it was actually fairly easy to get the throne, surprisingly easy. He took it quickly. I thought maybe that that was an indicator of how soft the society had become, but now, probably for some political reasons, the snake people wanted an Atlantean on the throne, fully intending to replace him later. Mm-hmm. They've been doing this for a long time.
They have human allies as well, the snake people, but Kanu has learned about them and how to fight them. But he doesn't have the power to do this on his own, and that's why he came to Cole. Cole says, we got to take care of this, and Rule says, you need to stick close to me. They move on through some secret passageways, only to stumble not onto a serpent person, but a ghost.
Yeah, it's like a big disembodied head in here. I mean, floating around.
Cole recognizes him as Ilal, king of Eleusia, who died 1,000 years ago. His statue still stands in the city. He was found hideously murdered in his throne room, the room now known as the Accursed Room. Rule explains that the snake men can enslave the souls of their victims. Cole says, then you better make sure I'm dead before they can do that to me, if it comes to that.
I don't want Solomon Kane creeping up in here with his courage once I'm a ghost. That's cool, though. So they killed him, replaced him, but still had his ghost.
Yeah.
To do with as they will as well. Oh, that's awful.
They're jerks.
Yeah.
Brule swears he will do this, and he asks the same of Cole. They're best buds now.
Yep. It says their strong right hands met in a silent sealing of their bloody bargain. So that's the one thing that made it into Predator.
Dylan, you son of a bitch.
That's the only thing that survived that 80s buddy comedy idea.
They got you pushing too many pencils.
And that gets it into chapter 4, Masks, which is basically a title to say, if you haven't gotten the theme yet, here it is, dummy. I do believe the cover story on this issue of Weird Tales, though, speaking of masks, was a story by Gaston Leroux, a Phantom of the Opera fan.
Oh, wow, okay. The next day, Cole sits on his throne. He's trying to play it cool, but he and Brule are on the lookout. They know something is going to go down today.
Yeah, well, actually, we forgot to mention, this is also in the middle of a local festival called Snake Days that Kanu has refused to shut down. So it might get extra confusing. Kids are running around in snake face paint, eating snake dogs. People are just yelling, snake! And then taking a picture and laughing or setting off fireworks. It's just a real seriously confusing scene out there. Tensions are high.
If only. Cole is going on 2 nights of not sleeping and is feeling pretty rough. Also, the guards were back to the real deals in the morning, and he asked them to say the words, and they could. So how did they pull that off?
It's like a reverse snake charming.
Oh, it's the snakes that do the hypnotizing.
That's right. Whoa!
Brule says that they have to be onto us now. I've got a signal that I can send to Kanu, and he'll attack. We just have to say the word when you're ready. So his aide, comes in and says that it's time for his 2 o'clock with the council. Cole and Brule are suspicious, but they proceed. In the council's chamber, there are 17 loyal men, or so he thinks. As he begins to speak, they move towards him. Brule jumps forward and shouts the words, Kanama Ka Laja Rama. The closest counselor recoils and is revealed to be a serpent man.
But I thought that he explains that they can't say those words because they evolved in such a way that they physically can't do it.
Yeah.
And yet suddenly now you just need to say it. And it reveals them as who they are. I think they could fake it.
Brule yells, slay, Cole. They be all serpent men.
The singing of his sword filled the room, and the onrushing flood broke in a red wave. But they surged forward again, seemingly willing to fling their lives away in order to drag down the king. Hideous jaws gaped at him. Terrible eyes blazed into his unblinkingly. A frightful, fetid scent pervaded the atmosphere, the serpent scent that Kull had known in southern jungles. Swords and daggers leaped at him, and he was dimly aware that they wounded him. But Kull was in his element. Never before had he faced such grim foes, but it mattered little. They lived, their veins held blood that could be spilt, and they died when his great sword cleft their skulls or drove through their bodies. slash, thrust, thrust, and swing. Yet had Cull died there but for the man who crouched at his side, parrying and thrusting. For the king was clear berserk, fighting in the terrible Atlantean way that seeks death to deal death. He made no effort to avoid thrusts and slashes, standing straight up and ever plunging forward, no thought in his frenzied mind but to slay.
Cull and Brule are tired and hurt, but victorious. They quickly realize that there was more illusion going on. They aren't actually in the council room, they're in the cursed room from before. So if they're in there, who's in the council chambers? Oh no!
That was a snake take. I'm surprised.
They approach the council chambers and can hear his voice coming from inside, his own voice.
But strangely sibilant.
It's a snake man pretending to be Cull. For some reason, this makes Cull question whether he's the real Cull or not.
Yeah.
Brule says, "Yo, dummy, you are the real Cull. Get in there and kick that sucker's ass." They burst in and the Red Slayers are there to guard the fake Cull. But since they see another crazed Cull, they don't know what to do. And that's all the pause Cull needs as he kills the serpent Cull.
Nice to know that they'd let that happen if the situation were reversed. If Snake Cull come running in.
Oh, right.
I'd fire all those guys after seeing that. You got to at least let the two Culls point at each other for a while and say, yeah. No, he's the real Cull. I mean,
yeah. They all see it's a snake man and he tells them to take the body and seal it into the accursed room. Cull gets dizzy. He's lost a lot of blood. Cull plunges his sword into the frame of the closed door of the accursed room, making a door jam and sealing that room closed forever. Cull's legs give out and he falls to the floor.
The counselors surged about the fallen king, chattering and shrieking. Kanu beat them back with his clenched fists, cursing savagely. "Back, you fools! Would you stifle the little life that is yet in him? How, Brule? Is he dead or will he live?" To the warrior who bent above the prostrate Cull. "Dead?" sneered Brule irritably. "Such a man as this is not so easily killed. Lack of sleep and loss of blood have weakened him. By Valka, he has a score of deep wounds, but none of them mortal. Yet have those gibbering fools bring the courtwomen here at once." Brule's eyes lighted with a fierce, proud light. "Valka, Kanu, but here is such a man as I knew not existed in these degenerate days. He will be in the saddle in a few scant days, and then may the serpent men of the world beware of Cull of Volusia. Valka, but that will be a rare hunt. Ah, I see long years of prosperity for the world with such a king upon the throne of Volusia."
That's the end of the story.
That's great. That's super fun. I like that story a bunch. Now, Blake Coleman, as you said that this was the beginning of the Reptoid Conspiracy, which is a little different. A professor of political science at Syracuse University, Michael Barkun, agrees with Blake.
Okay.
There was an account from 1967 where this guy was abducted by aliens who were reptilian humanoids. That's part of the mythos of this. And then the British conspiracy theorist David Icke published on this theme in his 1999 book, The Biggest Secret. It was him that took this whole complicated, all the world leaders are reptilian people pretending to be snake people, George W. Bush, Clinton, all those guys. There's video of Bush Senior, his eyes glint strangely in the light, and people try to say that that was the snake man coming through, his illusion was falling or something.
I can see that. Yeah.
But strangely, an American poll done in 2013 concluded that 4% of registered voters think that this stuff is real, that there is a real reptoid conspiracy.
I would have thought it would be higher. I live here. I would have guessed definitely.
Yeah.
That it would be higher. I'm always reminded of that Chris Rock bit about when, he says there's a difference between being rich and being wealthy. Given the way the world is, I don't know how you couldn't think that there's maybe a secret society running in the background. Well, I mean, there basically is, right? Cold-blooded people pulling all the levers. But I think the story also undercuts that conspiracy theory a little bit by speculating, isn't this just nature at work? Because at the end of it, Cull's thinking about his own role and how he has to be many things to many people.
Yeah.
This seems like a less it's a super paranoid story. Mm-hmm. I just think that it considers the question a little more deeply.
Yeah.
And as always, I enjoyed the pulp.
Yeah.
I had a good time with those fights. And it's nice because there was some interesting thematic stuff. It works on a really basic level. I mean,
it does.
We're all being lied to and suspect that it's a big conspiracy. And, personally, I don't believe in conspiracies because I don't think people have the ingenuity to keep it together.
No. Yeah.
And hide things, I think we'd have seen a snake person by now. Maybe I'm wrong.
Wait, what did you just say?
I said maybe I'm wrong.
I thought I heard a little hissing sound.
You know what? I want to thank that reader once again, Sean Burnham.
Also known as John Dingo, has his newly released EP called Witch's Mixtape.
Yes.
Which you should all get. I keep hearing a hissing snake sound.
It's just a bad high end on this recording.
Mm, okay. I want to thank you for doing an awesome job at the reading.
Yes. Thank you, Sean. And I also want to thank some patrons. I want to start by thanking Kirk Hedden.
Joe Pengrace. Thank you.
Timothy Adam Greenlee. Thank you.
And I just want to thank Adam. Thank you, Adam.
Justin Kuplin. Thank you.
Albert Jerome Washio III. Thank you so much.
Arn Lehrman, thank you so much.
Matthew Thomas, thank you.
Dennis McManus, you are awesome.
And FM Souverain, I hope I'm pronouncing that right. Thank you so much.
That's somebody's got an exact name like TV Hercules. FM Souverain, same kind of thing, see? That's all we have for this month of Thulai. It's been a great one. Always enjoy it. Not quite sure what we're jumping into next, but if you follow us on social medias, you will find out. That's all we've got for this week. I'm Chad Pfeiffer.
I'm Chris Lackey, and you've been listening to the H.P. Lovecraft Literary Podcast.
At hppodcraft.com.
hppodcraft.com.